powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
He's host of Alternate Routes with Kevin Frazier, as well as Chasing It with Chase Daniel on the 33rd team. Let's Talk NFL with Trey Wingo, joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Trey, how's it going?
Good, guys. How are you? Lots of stuff to talk about in the NFL the last couple of days.
I know. Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm going to actually jump ahead, even though we have a ton to talk about more recently. I have my eyes kind of set on the draft. I was just thinking about it this morning. And I got to be honest, we all are kind of expecting, obviously, Caleb Williams to go number one overall. So where does the draft actually start for you? Where does the interesting story start?
Well, I think it starts in what teams are going to move up to one of those top three, because I think quarterbacks are probably going to go 1, 2, 3 and potentially 1, 2, 3, 4. So for me, if the Bears are locked in at Caleb Williams at number one, what team that is outside those top picks is going to entice one of those other three or four teams with a package that will make a move to try and get up there? So I do think it's all in play. And look, the other thing we need to be clear about here is that we all think these quarterbacks are going to be good. There's no guarantee of it. Like, just go back and look at recent draft history. I mean, every quarterback taken in the 2022 draft, had only one quarterback taken in the first round, Kenny Pickett. He's been traded. Everybody else in that quarterback draft has been traded, except the last quarterback taken, Brock Purdy, who was the last pick of the entire draft. And he's led the team in two straight NFC Championship games and also got them to a Super Bowl this year. So we all have these metrics where we say, oh, this guy's going to be this and this guy's going to be great. And we're mostly wrong. So let's just be honest about it, right? I mean, we're mostly wrong. I mean, the Bears moved up one spot in 2017 and gave up a first-round pick to get Mitch Trubisky instead of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, we're really bad at this. Everybody is really bad at this. So it's my way of saying, look, I hope Caleb Williams is great. I hope all these quarterbacks are great. There's absolutely zero certainty or guarantee that any of them will be.
Yeah, that's facts right there. I try to remind people of that, Trey, but they don't listen to me. Maybe they will listen to you. So from quarterbacks,
I hope so.
It just takes some stress off of them. Just know most of the time organizations get things wrong. But I'm going to shift over to the wide receiver class, man. You put up a tweet a few days ago about the 1996 wide receiver draft class. It was crazy. Keyshawn, number one, no. Terry Glenn, Marvin Harrison. One of the greatest classes of all time. I'm looking at this class. I'm not saying they are equivalent to that class, but there's some talent in this wide receiver group. What do you make of the names we got this year?
Yeah, first of all, you're right. That 96 class was ridiculous. Terrell Owens was a fourth or fifth rounder. Joe Horn was in that draft. There's a couple of receivers in that draft that weren't even drafted and played very well. So it might be the single greatest draft of any position depth-wise in the history of the draft. Look, the wide receiver position is so emphasized right now in the NFL. Obviously, I think this class has the potential to do a lot of things. But, you know, it's so much about fit, right? It's so much about getting a player into the right system and getting him around the right coaching. Like Rashi Rice and what he was able to do for the Chiefs outside of the first round, you know, he went into an ideal situation where they had a need and sort of they were able to bring him along slowly. And now it looks like he's going to be their dominant receiver in year two as they pull for the freaky. This class is loaded. It is loaded with wide receivers. And I think that's one of the reasons the trade market has been a little deflated for these wide receivers. You know, a couple of years ago, we're seeing Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams get these massive deals, and hasn't really worked out. I mean, they've played well, don't get me wrong, but the result for the team has been the Miami Dolphins have yet to win a playoff game, and the team that traded away Tyreek has won two straight Super Bowls with a subpar wide receiving core. So it's about fit as much as it's about anything else, and there's a lot of talent in this draft, but talent alone doesn't mean you're going to be successful. You have to have the situation around you, the right coaching, and the understanding that really being drafted is not the end result of something. It's the beginning of a much more difficult journey.
I am glad that you talk about fit and about being on the right team. And you earlier, a question ago, you started talking about, God, we sometimes just get evaluation wrong. Like sometimes we're just so bad at this and you don't mean to be. You think you have the intel about quarterbacks and which quarterbacks are going to work out. And then you have a class that completely fails or guys that are total busts. What do we get so wrong about it? Is it just down to fit or are there other things that play into it? And this is specifically, Trey, with quarterbacks.
Right. Well, I think quarterbacks are now the most overdrafted position by far in the NFL. I mean, let's just go look at 2021, right? The heralded 2021 quarterback draft class. Trevor Lawrence was taken number one overall. And I want to be clear, by every possible metric, he should have been the number one pick in that. There were people that said after his freshman year at Clemson, if he was eligible, he can go play in the NFL right away because he has the body, he has the fit, he has the all those things you look for. And I'm excusing his first year because Urban Meyer will go down as, wait for it, the worst head coach in the history of the NFL. Oof. I don't think there's any debate about that. He was a horrendous fit. Speaking of fit, he didn't understand the job. He didn't understand the difference between coaching men and coaching teenagers. So I get that out of the way. Second year, Trevor Lawrence leads into the playoffs. They come back from 27 points down. They win a game. Great. We're moving in the right direction. They were 8-3 this year. They won one of their last six games. Missed the playoffs. Trevor has three more interceptions and three fewer games played and was third in the league in fumbles with a better team around him. The Jaguars and Trevor regressed this year. I think he still has the opportunity to be what people expect him to be, but there's still a question mark. Zach Wilson, the second overall pick in that draft, the Jets can't trade him for a ham sandwich right now, okay? Trey Lance, whom the 49ers gave up three first-round picks to move up to get, was traded away and was inactive when the Cowboys got smoked at home by the Green Bay Packers. Justin Fields was just traded away for a six-round pick, and Mac Jones lost his job to Bailey Zappi, and he was traded away for a six-round pick, and he's backing up Trevor Lawrence now. There are no guarantees in this, and it's such a quarterback-driven league. You heard GM Chris Ballard of the Colts say when they drafted Anthony Richardson last year, I don't want to make the mistake of him being a star somewhere else. And what do we hear about Anthony Richardson before the draft? What a freakish athlete. He's the strongest, most explosive, fastest quarterback we've ever seen in the NFL. He couldn't finish a game, okay? He played three games, couldn't finish the first two, and then in the last third, he was knocked out for the rest of the season. This is hard. It is extremely difficult, and people grab a quarterback, and they always want to draft a quarterback until you draft the wrong one, and then you become the Jets.
It's hard to get things right. I think you need the right formula, the coaching, the situation. I think you've done a great job explaining that to us. But when it comes to getting things right, man, I'm looking at the Houston Texans, and I love what they did last year, and their future is looking bright. Is there a surprise team for you going into the 2024 season? Because Houston was that for me, and I would assume for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, look, it's been 1 year, but it sure looks like the Panthers picked the wrong quarterback. And I hope Bryce Young has a wonderful career. But, my God, what C.J. Stroud was able to do and come in there under a great fit with D'Amico Ryans, the head coach, who came over and understood the situation. And they go get some of the players they picked up in the offseason, like Joe Mixon. The Texans are going to be really interesting. But I think the Steelers have the potential to be really interesting this year. And that may not be much of a surprise team because it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, but they really struggled at the quarterback position since Ben Roethlisberger retired. Well, now they have Russell Wilson there on a one-year deal, and backing them up is Justin Fields. They just signed Cordarrelle Patterson, and with the new rules that we have in the NFL right now, suddenly the idea of kick returns become very important, and we all know Cordarrelle Patterson can do that very, very well. The AFC North might be the toughest division in football this year, but I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, after having just a horrendous offensive output for most of the last two seasons, might really surprise people with how efficient that offense is going to become.
I really like the new kickoff rule. I don't mind it at all. I'm curious to know what you think about it. And also with the hip drop tackle, which has been a little more controversial.
Yeah, well, let's start with the kickoff. I love it because they're trying to increase the idea of kickoffs or kick returns.
Right.
You know, and basically what you're giving the kick returner is, okay, get through this one wall and you got a shot. And we've gone down to the point where we only had four or five kickoff returns for touchdowns last year. Really, really low. And I think this is going to increase that dramatically. I hate the new onside kick rule, by the way. I think that's a joke. Like, and I love the fact that it was proposed by special team coaches who basically say, hey, man, give us a chance. You know, like, we have to declare that it's going to be an onside kick. Hey, that's the dumbest thing in the world. Like, two of the greatest plays in the history of the Super Bowl were surprise onside kick. Everyone talks about Super Bowl 44 with the Saints and the Colts, which really changed the momentum of that game. But the next thing before that was Super Bowl 30. The Cowboys were cruising to take care of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they got a surprise on sky side and scored a touchdown to make that a three-point game that the Cowboys eventually won. But the surprise onside it's one of the most fun, exciting plays in the game, and they just neutered it. And I have no idea why they did that. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think we saw a stat the other day that most of the onside kicks come in the fourth quarter. I mean, you pretty much know when it's going to go down. And I'm right. The surprise element is what I love the most as well. I want to focus on the Kansas City Chiefs for a little bit, man. They're trying to do something they haven't, no one's done before in the Super Bowl era, back-to-back-to-back championships. Last year, that team was carried by the defense until you get into the playoffs and Mahomes just takes this thing over and says, look, I got you guys. What do you think, man? What do you think their odds are for them to see something we've never seen before?
Yeah, real quickly, before we get to that, she asked me the hip drop tackle, and I didn't say anything about that. So I, if you don't mind, I'd like to address that as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
The hip drop tackle is just a tackle, right? I mean, let's just be honest about it. It's a tackle. You are trying to get a defender to get an offensive player to the ground. And they talk about the injuries, whether it was to Tony Pollard in that playoff game a couple of years ago, or whether it was to Mark Andrews in the Monday night game between the Ravens and the Bengals. Go look at that tackle by Logan Wilson on Mark Andrews. That is defined as a hip drop tackle now. How else is he getting him to the ground? How else is he going to get this guy to the ground? You can't hit him high. You can't hit him in the knees. You can only aim for the waist. And if he's pulling away from you, you have to find a way to drag him down. Now, there are certain examples I understand. If you literally grab him by the waist and throw your body weight into that leg, and that creates an issue, like we saw the Jaguars defender do against Patrick Mahomes in the divisional round last year that hurt his ankle, and he still was able to gut it out and take them to the Super Bowl championship. But it's a tackle. Like, I really feel for defenders right now, unless there's an attempt to injure. And what I think is going to happen, you're going to see a million flags on this in the preseason games. And then once the games start, those flags will lessen up a little bit, unless it's really egregious. But I hate the idea of this, and I don't know what defenders are supposed to do.
All right, now back to my question. The Kansas City Chiefs, sure. Man, what do you think about them? Three-peat, no possibility. What are your thoughts?
Well, the coldest thing I've ever seen in all my years covering sports is that text that Patrick Mahomes sent to his family before the final game of the regular season, and Brittany Mahomes posted it.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I've decided we're going to win the Super Bowl. Not that I think we're going to the Super Bowl. I think we can win the Super Bowl. I think we have the team to do it. He decided, as if no one else had a say in the matter. And lo and behold, what did they do? They hold the Dolphins to their fewest point total of the season, 7 at home. Oh, never won a road playoff game. Fine, I'll just go to Buffalo. We'll take care of Josh Allen and the Bills. Oh, wait, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, number one seed and that outstanding defense? No, our defense is better, and we'll take care of that. And, I've been doing this a long time. I don't know that I've seen anybody like number 15. And Teddy Bruschi made one of the greatest points, I thought, about Patrick Mahomes, where he is now, when he was talking, because the comparison is right now, we're on the Brady goat track, right? That's where we are with Mahomes. And Tom was carried to his first few Super Bowls by the Patriots. He didn't become Tom Brady, the everything quarterback, really, until 2007. Where we got Randy Moss, and then you bring in Gronkowski and all this kind of stuff, and that he understood the position. Patrick Mahomes has been that way since his first season as a starter, when he threw 50 touchdown passes in 2018 and was the MVP. He got to the Super Bowl and won. He got to the next Super Bowl and they lost to Tom Brady because they had both of their tackles missing, and then they back-to-backed it now. He has carried this team at a much younger portion or start of his career than anybody in the history of the NFL. And, you know, his numbers are just astronomical when you look at the team's record in the regular season and the record in the postseason. They are ahead of Tom Brady after the same number of games in every statistical category. This guy's a killer, man. And if he wants to win the third one, barring massive injuries, which I understand can happen, why would you bet against him?
Right.
The Super Bowl was in Vegas this past year. And what's the rule in Vegas? The house always wins. The Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes are the MF and house. They're the house. Don't bet against the house, man.
Hey, Trey, I hope you don't mind. I just wanted to keep you an extra 30 seconds or a minute because I got to give a shout out and a recommendation for Alternate Routes. It's an amazing podcast, and I've seen you guys getting a ton of praise for it. I know you were just on Rich Eisen. It's just such a cool concept, like this entire what-if moment in sports for these monumental things that have such domino effects. What inspired this idea, and what's your favorite what-if so far? You got a couple episodes out already.
Yeah, we do. Thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun. Look, this is the conversation everybody has, right? About their team if things don't go their way. I mean, and one of the ones we recorded, I'm not sure if it's dropped yet, but would be very popular in Seattle. What if we just handed the ball off to Marshawn Lynch?
Oh, God. Like,
what if we just did that, okay? Let's just think about the real quick ramifications of that for a second as a plane flies overhead, so I apologize. It's a little loud. But if that happens, the Seahawks, not the Chiefs, become the first team to repeat as Super Bowl champs since the Patriots. Pete Carroll then becomes the first coach in the history of the NFL or the history of football with multiple championships in college and multiple Super Bowl championships. No one has ever been able to make that claim. The Patriots will have gone over a decade without winning a Super Bowl. Tom Brady probably gets jettisoned a few years early for Jimmy Garoppolo. And then Bill Belichick probably sees it all go sideways with Jimmy Garoppolo. So the stain is off that. And Marshawn Lynch, remember, he was launching that that athletic footwear line at that Super Bowl, or athletic leisure wear, sorry. And if that happens, maybe he becomes an icon in sports fashion and Lululemon doesn't exist.
It's such an amazing concept. There's already about four episodes out. If you guys have Wondery Plus too, you can listen to the new one, which is What If Chris Webber Didn't Call a Timeout. You get early access to those.
Yeah.
Very, very cool podcast. Absolutely recommend. It's called Alternate Routes with Trey Wingo and Kevin Frazier. He is Trey Wingo. Trey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Trey.
You got it, guys. Anytime. Take care.
Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, after starting spring 1-9-1, the Mariners, they climbed all the way back to the middle. Finishing with a winning record in spring training. What's the real headline?
Players are heading back up to Seattle. Meanwhile, the average age in Arizona is heading back up to 80. Yeah.
I love
Arizona.
I love Arizona for
place.
That.
It's a great place.
I meet a lot of sweet older people whenever I visit Arizona. I try to go once a year, every other year to go play some golf. So, I connect with the people there. Good for the Mariners, too, man, climbing back to all the way up to the middle, as Curtis put it. My main concern was just looking at the guys that we're going to rely on to show some improvement or any type of production. I think we got that out of almost everybody, other than some guys being banged up with inflammation in their elbow or whatnot. It's been a good spring training. I'm just glad it's finally getting real so we can get some real analysis on some games that matter.
I know. Obviously, Santo and Brash still dealing with injuries. Wu is going to start the season on the IL, though that should be a temporary stint similar to the one he had last season, which Shannon pointed out was just 17 days. But most of your lineup is healthy, and that's really where you had a lot of your questions, particularly at third base. Particularly when it came to, you know, where some of those, the strikeouts are gone, but where some of those home runs, where some of that power and those RBIs coming from, moving on from Teo, moving on from Gino. So thankfully, those guys are healthy heading into the season. I am fascinated to see what the offense is going to look like in the first month or two. So slow to start the year last season.
You think it's too far ahead. I want to see what they look like on Thursday, and then we'll get to Friday.
Okay.
Then after Friday, is there a game Saturday?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what
then
I want?
Saturday.
I'm going to call it now because I want it, though tomorrow is really when we're having a hype train. You know how last season they won the opener, and then the next game, Robbie Ray ends up leaving for the entire season. He's like walking a million batters, and then they lose the next two. I want a sweep. I want an opening series sweep. Just start the season fresh. You know what I mean? Just jump right in.
Remember last year's opener when James Karinchak got called for a pitch clock violation?
Yes.
And then the entire stadium just on him the entirety of the rest of his outing. And he was so flustered. What a moment that was.
I still have video of, I was taking video of the fans yelling at him. And in front of me are some guys going, check his hair! Check his hair! Just chanting it. It's what a moment.
What a moment.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. When it mattered the absolute least.
Let's go.
The Kraken blew out the Ducks to end their winless streak. What's the real headline?
You know, some people say you play your best hockey once you're eliminated.
No pressure.
Yeah.
Absolutely no. They were eliminated for about a month now. Oh, 0.7 chance. Get out of here. If a product says, hey, we're going to remove 99.2% of that fungus on your toe, you're going to say, oh, it's going to remove that. We're good to go.
Yeah.
Man, these dudes been out. But you know what? Hey, you live, you learn. I'm going to tell this story once again because it was ridiculous. This reminds me of my son's soccer game. They played the best team in the state and lost like 4-1. They score one goal at the end of the game and a parent yells, be proud, boys. That's just as good as a win. Oh, no, sir, it is not. Loser mentality. So them holding on to 0.7, 0.5, you know dang well they wasn't going to make it. So at least finish strong. I guess that you can. That's what you can do. That's what he should have said. Way to finish strong, boys.
Yeah.
Not, just as good as a win. It is not, sir. That is a loss.
I'm actually really glad that you mentioned that because when you think about the mentality that you want as a Kraken fan, the mentality, that they should have as a team, you are no longer a novelty. It is no longer this, oh, look, we have hockey in Seattle. Again, unless you were around in the early 1900s. Like, this is so fun. This is such a great time. There's an NHL team here. You are now entering what this will be your fourth year, upcoming season in 2024 and 25 as a franchise. Like, it's time to start raising those expectations and start, you know, treating it less like just an expansion team, which I know prior to Vegas, many of them had very slow starts. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But I think it's time to start looking at it as less a novelty and more as a real professional team where it's okay to be disappointed. It's okay to call for change. It's okay to start saying, like, I need more.
I just don't want the Kraken to fall into, like, the Mariners type deal to where every year you're excited, but then something happens, they fall a little bit short, and you have this long drought. I want them to be more like the Sounders and the Storm to where you're competitive every year
and
you're
competing
for a championship. Like, just be the best. You know, you don't have to settle into what these guys do.
Look, our standard's been set with these two teams.
Yeah, man, just be the best and do what you can to be the best. I don't know if that's spending money. I don't know how it works in hockey. Do you just get one superstar and build around them? I assume you do. You start in the goal. You still got Shane Wright, who we haven't seen much of. There's still some things for these guys to do. So just get through the year, finish strong, and we'll see
what happens. What's up with Shane Wright? Do we know what's going on there? Is it something that's like
still
he's
in,
just too young?
Still in Coachella Valley.
I wonder if he goes to the festival while he's there.
What's next?
It's on my bucket list.
Headlines we write.
I still believe in
that. Who was it? Is it Tyler the Creator? Is like headlining Coachella this year?
Bump's going to be out there just vaping with the kids.
Hey, vaping. Hey, sus,
what's
am
up,
I right?
My fellow youth?
Yay, Riz.
On God.
No cap.
They're like, on cap is so old, this person is at least a millennial.
Shane Wright has 43 points in 54 games for Coachella Valley, so pretty decent season for him. Headline number three, John Calipari returning to Kentucky next year for a 16th season despite yet another early first-round tournament exit. What's the real headline?
I can think of 33 million reasons why.
That'll
he has
it.
A 30, almost $34 nowhere. Million dollar buyout if he's fired without cause.
He ain't going nowhere. $33 million buyout. My buddy, his dad bought like a 2,500 square foot home for like $40,000 in Kentucky. So, Calipari, hold on to that money. He ain't going nowhere. No one else is going to take that job. It's so hard to be a college basketball coach these days. Just stick it out with Calipari and see what happens.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. All right, we are going to continue our conversation with evaluating draft talent at 12:45. Ray Roberts, Seahawks pre- and post-game show host, is going to join us at 1. We're going to switch to talking about the Seahawks draft and kind of the needs of this team moving forward. Before we get to any of that, you might not be done seeing Jason Kelce with the NFL. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Clowney Watch 2K24 is over. Clowney is going to Carolina. The Panthers are signing Jadeveon Clowney to a 2-year, $20 million deal worth up to $24 million. That's from ESPN's Adam Schefter. I think I had completely given up on the Seahawks adding more than maybe like an interior lineman remaining in free agency. Though people were curious if Clowney, having last year played under Mike McDonald and had a career year, would come to Seattle. What do you make of the move of him going to Carolina?
I didn't think he was coming to Seattle, honestly. I think that you have guys in place at his position, potential position, to do what you can ask him to do. He had a good year last year. His best year as a pro, actually. It took him like 9 years to get there. So good for him, man. Go over to the Panthers and help try to support Bryce Young. I'm not mad at the move. If he would have came here, I would have supported him. But that's not something I was like, oh, I hope the Hawks get Clowney. I wanted Patrick Queen. I wanted Geno Stone. I wanted Matabuke. But I would have settled for Clowney.
Yeah, Matabuke ends up getting franchise tag. Stone signs with the Bengals. Queen goes to the Steelers. Clowney was, you're right, I'm with you, like the fourth name on that list where I thought, well, maybe second time's a charm. We'll see what happens. But I do like the edge rushers, the outside backers that Seattle has. Boye Mafe, really promising second season. Obviously, you had Chenna Nwosu, who knows if he would have had double-digit sacks, assuming he would have stayed healthy. They just need to keep adding. You bring back Daryl Taylor, who you've talked about better fits as a situational guy. Mm-hmm. Would you add in the draft?
I would. I definitely would. The more, the better at that position. Lots of potential there. I think Chenna's good to go. I believe in him. Development, man. Develop, develop, develop. That's what they want to do here. Go ahead and get one in the draft.
Well, you may not be done seeing Jason Kelce in the NFL, though this time, unsurprisingly, it'll be behind the booth. According to Awful Announcing, ESPN is, quote, aggressively pursuing Kelce for its Monday Night Football pregame show, Monday Night Countdown. I think this would be a perfect fit.
I hear he would be in and RG3 would be out. Here's the thing about if you are a football player, a well-known football player who gets one of these positions to be an analyst, you got to look over your shoulder, man, because there's always some guy who is going to retire who has a big personality that people kind of connect with because of his recent playing days. Even though I think Kelce would be awesome on TV. He's a Canada guy. He played the center position. He knows football. He's a quarterback out there. So he'll give you an insight that we really don't get. When I think of offensive linemen who have like changed the game when it comes to analysis, I think guys like Jeff Saturday, I'm sure there are a couple more out there. He seems like he'd be a guy that would thrive in that role and give great insight. I'm happy for him.
I absolutely agree. He is great on camera. They've obviously got the Something Heights podcast.
Podcast, him and his bro.
Yeah, I complete Something Heights. I always totally blank on it, but
New Heights.
They're great. They're personable together. Mm-hmm. He's, to me, even the better host than Travis Kelce. Yeah. Like, Travis is clearly comfortable in the spotlight and, not at all shy in front of a camera. Thought he was great on SNL. But Jason really has it, I think, as an analyst and would do a great job.
Jason
there.
Will give you true analysis. I feel like Travis would give some analysis, but it's more fun. I can see Kelce really getting serious and perfecting his craft and just evolving. So, yeah, I'm for it.
Next up, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are entering the final year of Dak's Prescott with contract with no new deal currently on the table. Here's what Jerry Jones had to say.
I'm very satisfied that we've had the rosters that we wanted to have over the last 3-4 years. So with that in mind, we've got to pay the fiddler for having those rosters. Dak wants to do any and everything he can on and off the field to help us win. We are where we are. We have our contract. We're locked and loaded for this year.
What do you hear in that answer from Jerry Jones?
I feel he understands that there are going to be some financial challenges. And if you want to extend, you want to keep growing, you got to see some production on the football field and have them instill some belief. Now, I think Dak has done enough to have Jerry say, this is our guy for this year. But going forward, you cannot consistently have one of the more talented rosters in the league and fall short every single year. No knock on Jerry's age, but he knows he ain't got that much time left here. He's making smart decisions. I'm all for him taking his time and try to get this thing right. Because every single year, even I fall into the Cowboys trap and I say, that roster is ridiculous. They should be winning ball games. Regular season, they look good. One of the best offenses in the game. And then the playoffs come and they look totally different.
As Jerry said, though, it's also time to pay pieces on that roster. You can't pay Micah Parsons top dollar, pay CeeDee Lamb top dollar, and also reset the market with Dak. Dak's just going to need to accept that until you play like, you know, a market-setting quarterback, we can't afford to pay you like one anymore.
Nah, I got to produce, buddy. He's a baller, though. That's the thing. He's a good football player. He's a good quarterback. He can play for any team in this league, but you got to win.
As you guys remember, Dre Greenlaw tore his Achilles running onto the field during the Super Bowl. 49ers GM John Lynch said that he hopes Dre Greenlaw will be ready to play week one, but understands it might be a PUP situation. Obviously, bad news for the 49ers for their linebacker situation for Greenlaw. Just a heads up as we look around the West and start to move forward throughout the offseason, figuring out where our competition is here.
So unfortunate the way Greenlaw went out.
I know.
Excited to get on the field and lead that defense. He kind of hesitates a little bit to run on the field, and then Boone tries to burst off of that. I think it was right leg. And you see the pop, and you felt the the energy just go down when it comes to the 49ers. Fred Warner's right there witnessing this whole thing. Greenlaw will be okay. He'll battle back and be fine, but you just take your time. There's enough talent on this roster for the Niners to be okay for a few weeks without him, possibly the majority of the season. But you always want a guy like Greenlaw out there. Who's going to step up next? I'm waiting to see what Hufanga looks like, too. He's coming off an ACL injury over there with that defense. This is football, man. Guys get banged up, you get hurt, next guy up.
Just such a freak accident, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we talked about it post-Super Bowl, obviously, but, like, just running back onto the field after an offensive series, you just step slightly the wrong way, and that's it. That's your season.
Unpredictable.
The NFL has voted to move the trade deadline back, but only a week to week 9. The league didn't want to move it back further because of concerns about tanking from teams clearly out of the playoff race. And Bump, I gotta say, I absolutely agree with this move.
No, I love it. I love it. Give teams more time to evaluate who they are and where they need help, even if it's just a week. I know some people are going to say, well, it's just a week. I mean, that's 7 more days to figure out who you are, 1 more game to figure out who you are and what you need. I wouldn't even mind it pushed back to week 10, but I do understand the logic behind this whole thing. You want teams to continue to try to compete to win. You don't want to see tanking. In football, it's hard to tank anyway. And when you do put a team out there who's not capable of winning, that's where you really see injuries. You're going to see injuries regardless in the NFL, but tanking is a dangerous game when you're talking about football.
Has there been a time that you guys can think of where a team was clearly tanking? It's tough.
Maybe the Browns with like Hugh Jackson.
It becomes obvious when you do it. Like, it's hard to.
Like, what do? You sit your starting quarterback who's healthy.
Exactly.
I mean, we saw something like that, but it was more for contract situations last year with Russell Wilson asking him to sit so they can protect themselves financially. But I can't remember where it's a blatant, we are tanking, go ahead and sit down for the rest of your type situation.
Wasn't it like week 17 a couple of years ago, the Eagles got in trouble because had they won, they would have gotten, I think, the last playoff spot. But if they lost, they would have gotten like a top 10 pick in the draft.
But there was also a little, wasn't there a little thing, I hope someone remembers this, where they could have messed up a divisional rival and they almost hurt themselves instead of hurt themselves to hurt a divisional opponent and get a better draft spot or something like that. I need to look back at this. This was really controversial at the time. People were not happy about it. I need to look this up.
They
Someone needs to find this for me.
Basically threw the final game of the regular season to move up 3 spots in the draft. And then he took Jalen Hurts out of the game and put in backup Nate Sudfeld while trailing late in a 1-score contest.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
You can't talk your way out of that. Mm. You know why else I think it's tough to tank in football? Player careers can be maybe 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have a lot of guys who go, well, I would like to sign with another team. I would like to get a second contract. This might be all I have.
Yeah.
It's just disrespectful.
I mean, the players who are on the field are obviously going to go hard. But the combination of the players can determine, obviously, how well you do.
We're going to bring on Ray Roberts at the top of the hour to talk about the Seahawks' biggest question marks on the roster heading into the offseason, what pieces they need to address and add in the draft. Before we get to it, though, we're going to stick with the draft, but broaden our scope a little bit. Why are we collectively sometimes so bad at evaluating talent? Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Trey Wingo was on with us to begin the hour, and as part of our conversation with him, Bump and I talked with him about the draft, and he said, yeah, I got to be honest, we're not very good at evaluating draft talent sometimes, and we can especially get quarterback evaluations wrong.
The other thing we need to be clear about here is that we all think these quarterbacks are going to be good. There's no guarantee of it. Just go back and look at recent draft history. I mean, every quarterback taken in the 2022 draft, one quarterback taken the first round, Kenny Pickett, he's been traded. Everybody else in that quarterback draft has been traded, except the last quarterback taken, Brock Purdy, who was the last pick of the entire draft. So we all have these metrics where we say, oh, this guy's going to be this, and this guy's going to be great. And we're mostly wrong. So let's just be honest about it, right? I mean, we're mostly wrong. I mean, the Bears moved up one spot in 2017 and gave up a first-round pick to get Mitch Trubisky instead of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, we're really bad at this. Everybody is really bad at this. So it's my way of saying, look, I hope Caleb Williams is great. I hope all these quarterbacks are great. There's absolutely zero certainty or guarantee that any of them will be.
I know that the draft can be kind of like a lotto, but why are we sometimes so bad, and why do we as football fans as the NFL miss so clearly on some of these.
This is what we're not bad at. We're not bad at identifying the best players in college football. I think that's the easy part. You can look at the Heisman and say, okay, they got the five guys right. Why Marvin Harrison was invited to New York, I don't know.
Well,
I do
votes.
Know his dad, Ohio State, dude's a baller, makes sense. But for the most part, we can identify who the best players in college football are. The problem is identifying if they're going to work in our system and what steps are they going to take moving forward. Are they going to be able to adjust to the NFL game? Are organizations going to be able to support these guys and develop them in ways that allows them to flourish? I'm just looking at the last 10 years of the number one pick in the draft, Bryce Young. That has a potential to be a bust. We don't know. We're still waiting. First year was horrible. Trayvon Walker, all right, not bad. All right, you got Trevor Lawrence. I think he's panning out. He has to prove it this year. Had an off year last year. Joe Burrow's good. I think Kyler Murray's okay. Baker Mayfield's on like his third contract. Myles Garrett has been Defensive Player of the Year. Jared Goff is considered a top 10 quarterback now with the Lions. Jameis Winston had a couple years. Like, these guys aren't, for the most part, you're not going to get complete busts, but you're not guaranteed to get Hall of Fame type quarterbacks. And I think it comes down to projecting how their skill translates in the NFL in a certain situation. We're looking at Justin Fields right now and saying he's probably better off with the Steelers mm-hmm. than with the Chicago Bears, an organization that has never produced a passer to throw over 4,000 yards. Buckus played for the Bears and never made it to the playoffs. That was crazy to me that he's never been there. So it's more than just evaluating the talent. I think we're okay at that when it comes to the college ranks. It's more about projecting what they're going to do on the next level and if they will be surrounded by the right pieces to help that development. Because I can imagine a guy like Bryce Young, who I think can toss the football and mm-hmm. is a good quarterback, mm-hmm. but he's with the Carolina Panthers where there is absolutely nothing. So imagine if he was in a situation like C.J. Stroud with the Texans, with D'Amico Ryans, with Will Anderson, with all the weapons they have over there. He might look better. Who knows? But evaluating, I think we're fine. Projecting is where we kind of slip up.
I think I agree with Trey Wingo in that people overdraft quarterbacks because there's such a pressure, understandably, to find the right one. And that's a pressure from fans. That's pressure from the front office. And if you're a GM, you're staring at, you know, number two going, well, Mitch was the one I have the most confidence in. I'll go ahead and take him. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see why teams make those decisions. You can see why a team like San Francisco, you know, looking at, well, we had Jimmy G and that didn't work out. You know, like, let's see what we do. Trades up to three and takes Trey Lance and thinks, oh, we think we found our mix of, what do they say, Matt Ryan and RG3. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see all of the potential with these guys. And it's the most important position. You're going to reach. You're going to make trades. You're going to make risky moves. I also think sometimes great players slip even slightly because people outthink the room. So, like, Patrick Mahomes, mm-hmm. people thought, well, it's like an air raid system. Like, is that really going to translate to the league? With Aaron Donald, I think that he went, like, what, 11? If he were to go, again, he'd be drafted first, second overall. I don't remember who was first that year. But he wasn't because people thought he was slightly undersized. What if he's, like, kind of a tweener between, like, an edge rusher and an interior mm-hmm. guy? You know, like, what if that? And then he ends up being one of the best defensive tackles the league has ever seen, certainly the most decorated. We also just overthink the room and outthink the room. DK Metcalf slipping late into the second because of a neck injury and because people thought, is he too good to be true? Like, that's a mm-hmm. real fear.
Yeah, it is. It's almost sometimes going for the obvious is frowned upon.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, no, watch this. I'm really going to get him with this one. We're going to reach and take this guy. But I also understand the need to reach at the quarterback spot. The quarterback touches the football every single play on offense, unless you're running a wildcat, obviously, or some type of trick play. So you're going to look for the guy that you trust with the football in his hand, and sometimes you're going to see things that aren't there. Just like in relationships, sometimes you're just so infatuated with a person, you ignore some red flags and say, you know what, I'm just going to ignore that and focus on the good, and it might work out for you. Sometimes it won't work out for you. That's human error. That's what makes things like the draft so fun, because we're not going to get it right all the time. There's no foolproof way to guarantee that somebody's going to work out. No doubt in my mind that Caleb Williams is the best quarterback in this draft. Going to the Chicago Bears, I think it's going to be rough. Chicago Bears have shown to have a history of not developing guys. There's no doubt in my mind that Marvin Harrison, I think, is capable of being a number one type of receiver. Is he going to stay healthy? is him not competing at the combine or pro day kind of foreshadowing his individualism and kind of his, he's going to be like a prima donna in the league. We don't know. You're taking these gambles on these young men and saying, we hope this is going to work out. And it's the hardest thing to do in football is project what someone's going to do. After a year or 2 years, I think you kind of figure out who they are. And either you move on from a guy or you they've done enough for you to believe in them and you stick with them. It's just a gamble, man. It will never be foolproof. People will always reach for the quarterback. And the way the game is going, receivers will gain more and more value. I think we haven't seen a number one pick go receiver since Keyshawn Johnson, I believe. I think there's going to be a run a couple of years where you see a receiver go number one just because they're getting developed, and they're going to start reaching there because of the way the game is going. This is the beauty of the NFL draft, man. Nobody really knows who's going
to
do what.
I'm curious to explore this conversation a little bit more with Ray Roberts, like what we get wrong with that evaluation, right? Like, I agree. It's like you fall in love with the wrong things, like, oh, he's got such a big arm, completely ignore accuracy. Mm-hmm. Or you get scared about the wrong things, like, oh, Pat Mahomes, air raid, I don't know. And it's like, look at what this guy is doing. Like, just pay attention to him. I also am curious to ask Ray, outside of just the NFL at large, what the Seahawks have gotten wrong. Like, where did the Seahawks miss? Why do we sometimes miss on some of these picks? And importantly, what do we need in this draft class coming up? 2024, number 16 overall. Ray joins us next. Don't go anywhere.